Welcome to Mumfessions, the podcast that will normalise all of the challenges we experience as mums. I'm Laura Guckian, life coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. This podcast is unlike any other motherhood podcast, because you will be my guests. Each week, I will invite you to share your mumfession. A mumfession is a challenge or experience that you are too afraid to share. The stuff that makes you feel like you are doing this whole motherhood thing wrong. I am going to help you recognize you are not the only one. You are not doing anything wrong. And most importantly, I will give you the tools you need to be a happier mum. And guess what? This season, I've invited some special guests to help me answer your mumfessions. Because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Coming up this week.
It's one of these moments in motherhood when I was in the trenches and I had a reflux of baby and I was potty training. He's 10 now and he still remembers this moment.
I tried to do it the other way. Like you said, I was trying to be the good mom. I was trying to do everything right. It didn't work for me.
It's taken 9 years to finally admit and be okay with not doing it all.
Our nervous system does not care what the stressor is. It just wants us to find a way out of it.
I feel completely alone and like the worst mother in the world. I wish I could be a better mother for my children because they deserve so much more than me.
Make sure you listen until the end, where I'll be sharing my weekly tip and challenge to help make things easier for you. Before we begin, I'd like to ask you to do something for me. Please hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you are listening. My guest today, I am so excited for her to join us. If I think back to when I first clapped eyes on this lady, I was in the depths of struggling in motherhood, and she was the first person that was putting words around my experience of motherhood and sort of giving permission to talk about it in a way that I'd never felt before. And I was instantly hooked. And as I sort of grew my business, I connected more with her. And I can honestly say, without a doubt, she is one of the kindest people that I have ever met, is always willing to support and looks for absolutely nothing in return. So I am so excited to introduce you to mum, psychotherapist, a podcaster, best-selling author whose book, The Uncomfortable Truth, is now out, Anna Matter. I am so excited to welcome you to Mumfessions.
Well, thank you for having me, Laura. I absolutely loved meeting you at my book launch. You were, you know, when you sometimes worry about meeting someone that you followed for so long, you think, are they going to feel as I imagine them to feel? But you just radiate warmth and kindness and everything that I experience from you, from following your work. So it was just heaven to have you there. So thank you.
Oh, and I was so thrilled to go because, like, if I'm being honest, back in the day, I sort of really girl fanned you. I really, and I still do, look up to you and have so much respect for what you do. And to meet you in person, it's weird, isn't it? When you meet someone that you've been looking at online and then you're like, oh, wait, you're actually exactly the same.
Okay, that's a relief.
It's a real moment. And that room that night to describe it at your book launch. And, you know, I think Zoe said it in her speech, like everyone was there because you had helped people. Like you, and it's a rare thing to find, to help people and not look for anything in return. But you're always the little voice in my ear going, keep going, Laura, keep going,
just keep going.
So I am so thrilled to have you here today. And you're going to share with us today your mumfession. And then you are going to help us answer an audience mumfession. But before we get into that, I would love to ask you, it's probably a bit of a specific question, but what drove you to get into your line of work? Because I mentioned there you're a psychotherapist, you're an author, you know, you really, really help people. Can you remember the moment where you were like, this is the work I have to do?
Yeah. So I historically was a therapist working in really normal settings that you'd think about with the two chairs and the box of tissues. And I worked in clinical practices, GP surgeries, and I absolutely loved it. But it was one of those things that was kind of tricky to navigate around babies and kids. What I'd do is I'd rent a little clinical practice room near where I live in Surrey, and then I'd drop my kids off at my friend's house and their travel cots, and then they'd nap and I'd go and see my clients, and then I'd come back and pick them up. And I love doing that. But after having my second, he had silent reflux that went undiagnosed for a while. And as a result, I had postnatal depression, like horrendous intrusive thoughts. I honestly questioned my sanity. I thought, how can I ever be a therapist when I am just, I can't get my own way out of this darkness? And it was incredibly humbling for me as someone who went into that line of work because I wanted to help people. And it was, I kind of wanted to help myself along the way. My identity was basically, I want to help people, having grown up in a difficult situation where we lost my sister to cancer when she was seven. And there was so much grief and trauma that I decided that I was going to make everyone else's life easier by being a helpful, kind, good girl. Right. And that kind of worked for a lot of my life. I pleased a lot of people as a people pleaser. I made a lot of friends. I did a lot of good and helpful things. But when it came to chronic sleep deprivation, two young children under two, and finding myself on my knees, I couldn't please everyone anymore. I couldn't be the helper because I could not even really help myself. So it was this real wake up call to the fact that I needed people as much as I gave two people. And in that, I downloaded Instagram. I was moving house. I wanted inspiration for what colors to paint our new build white box walls. And that's how I found Instagram. And I found all these mums on there that were talking more openly about some of these things that I was struggling with. And after I decorated my house and had no interest in talking about paint colors anymore, I started sharing little bits around mental health because that was, I was passionate about it and I wasn't seeing clients. So it felt like somewhere to put that passion. And that's kind of really where that line of work began. It wasn't intentional. I didn't think I'm going to grow an Instagram account. I'm going to write books. But I just started throwing my words out there and hoping and knowing statistically that if I was going to talk about intrusive thoughts, I knew that other people would be struggling with them. And maybe if I could layer on some of my psychotherapeutic knowledge, that might be helpful. So yeah. That's kind of where it started.
And it doesn't surprise me in any way that you did grow and become, you know, the success that you are now, because, and maybe there were people talking about it at the time. I certainly couldn't see them, but you were one of the first people I definitely came across that was saying, as you say, those things like intrusive thoughts as a mom, rage, all of those things that we're not supposed to talk about. And when we're experiencing it, we feel completely alone. And I think what you did for women across Ireland and the UK and probably further afield was say, hey, I'm a professional, like I'm a psychotherapist and I'm feeling it and it's okay. And I think the power in that and the work that you and I do with mums is giving that space to go. And that's why we have Mum Fessions today, is we're actually all feeling this to some degree. It doesn't make you a bad mother. It's actually perfectly normal. And this is how you can navigate it. And that's why I am not surprised you grew. And also the change we go through when we become mums and go through matrescence, it just cracks us open. Mm. We fundamentally change and we are so vulnerable. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, Anna. And I'm so glad in a way you stopped talking about the house stuff and started talking about this, because, oh my goodness, you have changed, genuinely changed the lives of so many women, I think, in the work you do. So thank you from all of us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm just getting it out there, really. And I think being a therapist, I have this absolute privilege of knowing that I'm not the only one, because I hear people's behind the scenes stories. I've sat there for hundreds of hours. So when I talk about intrusive thoughts, I know I have the confidence and I don't need to feel ashamed, because someone might turn around to me and say, Anna, you're crazy. I'm like, the thoughts might be crazy, but here's why they happen. Here's what we do about them. And absolutely, I am not. So I have that confidence. And I just hope that, the desire is that it just frees other people up when they feel that shame. So,
and it is a place of privilege, because I often say this as well in the line of work I do. And it's part of why I created this podcast. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm talking to mums every day. And you probably see it in your work as well, where it might take a couple of sessions for them to build up that trust. And they'll suddenly go, oh my goodness, Laura, I did this or I felt this. And you can feel the weight of the shame they're carrying. And my response is normally, I hear this all the time. And I've that privilege. But they don't have that privilege. They don't know. They think they're the only one and they've been building it up in their head. And I love what you say to separate the thought from the person. And let's look at that and how to navigate it. It's a really helpful way to look at it. Really helpful. which leads me on to my big question for you, Anna. Anna Matter, can you please tell me your mumfession?
Oh gosh, I've not spoken about this publicly before, Laura.
Okay,
but I'm going to talk about it because it's one of these moments in motherhood when I was in the trenches and I had a reflux of baby and I was potty training my then, he must have been two, I don't know, I can't even remember. He's 10 now. He's nearly 10, right? And he still remembers this moment. And we had gone to a baby group, a little play group. It was very sweet. I used to go every week and there were some lovely ladies there who just mothered us and it was everything that I needed and had friends and we'd just join each other in the chaos and we'd hold each other's babies whilst we went for a wee and, you know, we'd keep each other's toddlers happy and share snacks and all of these things. And I just loved feeling mothered there. And I remember this moment, I was so tired, Laura. I was so chronically sleep deprived and I was refusing all support. So even my husband wasn't allowed to sleep in the same room as me and the baby because I felt so ashamed at the exhaustion and the despair and those feelings actually that now, and it shows how far I've come, I'd be like, come sit with me. I am not okay. Help me, help me. I'm not okay. Whereas in those days, and it breaks my heart. And I know that so many mums listening to this will may well be there. So I'll share it is that, you know, I didn't want anyone to see the truth of how broken I felt because I felt so ashamed of that. And I thought, I help people. Why can't I help myself? And with that as the backdrop, my son had an accident of the smelly variety. So we went into this toilet just below the playgroup in this church. And I had the baby and I was so tired and I was so broken and I had no fuse. And I found post training so stressful because I just did not have this, I didn't have any capacity to deal with those moments, you know, the juggling,
the extra.
And I lost it with him. Laura, I lost it with him and I screamed at him and he just cried and my other son was crying. And I just remember feeling this release of rage and this absolute shame. And I'm crying already. And this shame and horror of how I was speaking to this precious little boy of mine who was just trying his best. And, you know, I gathered myself and I dried his tears and we tumbled out of that accessible toilet in this church hall. I carried this immense shame, this immense feeling of failure, this immense questioning of what kind of mother am I if I can't respond well to my toddler when he's just being a toddler and he's just trying his best. And there was nothing purposeful about that. There was... it was just, that's my mumfession is this moment, kind of 7-8 years ago that my son, he still remembers. He recalls that moment. He remembers that's how visceral it was. So not only tied up in that moment is the horror of how I responded. And I must say, this isn't the only moment like this that I could have picked share with you, but it's these visceral moments where you have nothing left to even take a breath, nothing left to even think, what am I actually dealing with here? What actually matters to me here? What actually matters in this context, in this moment? You are so flooded with stress. You are so depleted that you cannot even take a breath. And then what comes out of you is this messy, horrible stuff that you've been holding in over and over, trying to be calm, trying to do the right thing. And then you just quite spectacularly don't.
Yeah.
So that's my mumfession.
Oh, Anna, thank you for sharing it, first of all. But as you're sharing it, I got upset too, because I think, and everyone listening, I think we've all done it. And that's not to take away from your experience in any way. But I'm saying that because as you were describing that moment, I'm like, I can think of several moments when I did that with my children. And I'd be really curious to know, in the moment, what was the hardest part about that? I know we're reflecting back on it now, years later, but because what I'm hearing is it was this new vulnerable mum. Like, he was two or three, right? He was still really small. We know now you were navigating with tressens, probably postnatal depletion. You were completely depleted right? You were probably still at that stage, as you were saying, not able to ask for the support that you needed. You were doing so much. You were giving so much. You were trying so hard. But when you were in it, as that new, vulnerable, exhausted, depleted mum, trying her best, what was the hardest part about that? As you said, release. I heard a release. I didn't hear shouting or rage. I heard it was a release. What was the hardest part?
I think the hardest part was the fact that it was such a release, that it was such a letting go. And there was something very cathartic about just roaring and screaming and being angry, because...
What were you angry at?
In that moment, the anger was coming out the fact that he'd done a poo in his pants and I was didn't want to deal with it. And I was tired and it was stressful and we'd been at it for a while and I had a baby that was not sleeping. And you know, it was that's where all this rage in that moment was directed at. So there was that release that kind of felt in that moment quite cathartic, because it was very physical. It was very physiological. It was like so much had been kept down and pushed inside moment to moment, the deep breaths, the keeping calm and carrying on despite the fact that, you know, you're just exhausted and you need help, but you don't know how to accept it because it feels like a challenge of identity of how you know yourself to be. And, you know, they're hosting people when in truth, I just needed to be mothered. You know, all of these moments just built and built and built to this fire inside of me that in that moment just erupted like a volcano and it released the pressure. So there was a relief, but also there was an immense horror at my own capability to totally just flip like that.
Yeah.
That it had collateral.
What do you think your little inner critic was saying to you in that moment?
Just that I was a total failure. I could see fear in my son's eyes. He was scared of me. I was his caregiver. I was his mother. I was his protector. And suddenly I, you know, in that moment, I was an absolute threat. I was scary. Yeah. You know, so I saw my inner critic, saw all of this unfold, saw the horror in his eyes, knew that whilst there was something releasing about that this, there was also something very damaging about this. And I call it these thundercloud moments, right? Where our nervous system does not care what the stressor is. Mm-hmm. It just wants us to find a way out of it. It just wants us to fight or flee. Mm. Because that is how carnal our stress response is. It doesn't care whether it's a bear chasing you or whether it's a very loved child screaming and pawing at you. So this physiological response in our bodies, when we're not finding ways to let the pressure valve go in healthy ways, you know, through talking and resting and need meeting, you know, it just builds up and up and it becomes more and more, we become more and more easily triggered and there's more in there that's been pushed down to flood out.
Yeah. I love how you're describing it there, Anna, because I think, you know, let's call it what it is. It was an episode of mum rage. Yeah. You know, I don't call it mum rage. You might disagree. I call it depleted reserves. When I experience it, I've now done so much work that I don't say, oh, you're a terrible mother, Laura. I go, okay, this is a signal. You are completely depleted. You need to meet your needs. But in that moment, it doesn't feel like it. And it's the narrative that comes with that from the shoulds of motherhood and what the good mom is, you know, that myth of a good mom equals X, Y, and Z. And so when we experience it, we start automatically going, you're a bad mother. You're not doing it right. You're not doing enough. Look what you've done to your child. And it goes into overdrive. And because we are so vulnerable, as you say, that capacity just isn't there. It's not there. And it's really, really, really hard. And it's something I hear all of the time from my clients. And I'm sure you do too. And it's just not spoken of. And I really want to normalize this, that so most mothers experience this. But what's so sad about it is the feeling afterwards. And I think for me, and that's what I wonder about with you, if you were to look at how it felt in the moment or how it felt afterwards in the weeks, the months, the years, which part of it was harder?
Yeah, I mean, the moment was harder, and I'm totally with you on now seeing those moments as absolute depletion and finding compassion for myself and knowing that where we rupture that connection, we can repair. Like, if my son ever brings it up, you know, I say, I take responsibility and I say, oh, I should not, that was not okay. I should not have spoken to you in that way. And I'm so sorry that happened. I was so tired and I wasn't letting daddy help me. And I need help. We all need help sometimes. And we can gently work to kind of gently educate and repair. And I think the challenge is that with this good enough mother ideal, which my whole book, Raising a Happier Mother, is basically a dismantling of, is that by trying to be the good mum all the time, the happy, patient, smiley, I've got this, I meet all the needs of my kids on my own, I don't need any help. You know, that's what I understood a good mum to be. Mm. But it was in trying to fulfill that, that I actually ended up having some of the worst mothering moments of my life that I pretty much think counteracted.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the recognition that a good enough mom is, for me, it looks like accepting support, asking for support. It looks like embracing rest, because I know that if I rest well, I can parent well. Mm. So my self-care is selfish thing is so long gone out the window now. I prioritize looking after myself because I know that in doing that, I'm loving my kids. I know that in doing that, I'm increasing my resources and my reserves. Waving the white flag of surrender and saying, you know what, I haven't got this. I am not okay. I need help. This is too much. Enables people to step in and fill my gaps instead of me just trying to do it all. And it's in that actually those moments of mum rage, those moments where there is so much collateral damage to clear up, theirs and mine, they've actually reduced.
Yeah.
They're rare now because, yes, I mean, there are moments it all goes wrong. There are moments when I do lose it. But that moment and some of the other moments around that time was so damaging because I was trying so hard and pushing so much down, and all the shoulds were keeping me very ashamed and stuck.
Yeah, the shoulds.
Yeah, the shoulds.
The shoulds are so damaging.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. You and I are very alike in this sense. And maybe it's because we went through those challenges. Maybe it's because in our soul and our bones, we know what it felt like to deeply struggle in those early years of motherhood. And I always say, as a result of that, I genuinely believe I'm the most important person in my family.
Yeah.
Like, my needs must come first. Like, it's not up for negotiation. And the reason that is because I tried to do it the other way. Like you said, I was trying to be the good mom. I was trying to do everything right. And it didn't work for me. And I know the way I can be, I call it the best mom I can be, which looks different every day, is to literally make sure I'm okay. And if I'm okay, my kids are okay. And I think that's what's so special about you, is I think we've both felt it. We know that feeling is. And it will never in a way leave us. But I think it's what drives our work with mothers now. It's what drives our passion of, we need to talk about this. You mentioned something there before we get into the audience momfession about repairing with your son. What's your advice around that? Because we've all done it, whether it's having a moment of rage like that or doing something where our little brain is telling us, you're not doing it right, you're not a good enough mom. How do we, first of all, repair with ourselves? And then how do we repair with our child? And I suppose give ourselves permission to be perfectly imperfect.
Yeah. So I think repairing with ourselves is this powerful and I think often life-changing stance of seeing those moments as depletion. Seeing rage, seeing anger, seeing those, we can so harshly criticize them because we think they're ugly. We think it's out of control. We think, you know, we're flawed. We think it's shameful. But actually, if we just change stance and we think, you know what, that is a red flag popping up right there to say that I am done. I have no reserves. I call it the Mary Poppins to the Hulk continuum. Like the moments, like how long does it take you to go from la, 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 I'm just making dinner in the kitchen to get out of that, you know, the Hulk where it's just all erupting. And if, you know, how long it takes you to go from the one to the other, to me is an indicator of how burnt out or depleted you are. You know, when it's all going on in the kitchen and I'm, oh, la, 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 this is fine, to, you know, if something's kicking off, which it often is in my house, you know, if I'm able to take that breath, if I'm able to go, okay, this is a lot, what can I do to help myself? What can I do to calm my nervous system down so that I respond to this in a way that is in line with how I want to? Mm. You know, that shows that I've got a bit of something in the tank. Because when we're depleted and we're running on empty, our body is just firing off. It's like, I am not safe right now. This is too much. This has tipped me over the edge, this noise, this stress, whatever it is. And if our kids are having constant meltdowns and tantrums, we're there thinking, okay, what's going on for them? They have had a very busy weekend. How can we pull back this week? How can we actually just say, sod the homework? We need an evening just to downregulate. How can we, what can we do to get everyone on the sofa snuggled up? What do they need? Are they hungry, tired? You know, we're seeing that meltdown, you know, gladly not as maybe a generation or two ago as a bad child, naughty child needs discipline. And we're seeing that as, okay, my child is needing something here.
Yeah.
You know, if we can turn that towards ourselves, that is a very powerful place to start. Because then when we're not shaming ourselves, we can take responsibility. We can take responsibility to think what needs to be met here.
Oh, I love that line, Anna. Sorry for interrupting, where you said, when we're not shaming ourselves, we can take responsibility. And I actually think it's a step further of we can take action.
Yes.
Because so many mothers live in the shame.
Shame makes you frozen. It makes you stuck. What can you do when you're just beating yourself up? You're turning it all inwards.
Yeah.
You're not saying, what's going on here? What do I need? You're saying you're a bad mother. You don't deserve these kids. You know, what's wrong with you? Like, we can't do anything from that place. So when we find compassion, we take responsibility. And then from that place, we can choose to take action. And that is where the repair comes, is we take responsibility. We say to our kids, you know, I said to my son the other day, I'm sorry for shouting at you. He said, oh, it's okay, mummy. And I was like, no, it's not actually. Mm-hmm. It's not okay. It happens because we're human and I'm grumpy and I'm tired and I should have gone for a walk at lunchtime, but I decided to do my emails instead. And I wish that I'd gone for a walk because I needed to talk to Nana and have a nice chat, or, you know, and it's taking responsibility and it's saying to your child, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Because when we're shouting at our kids, they feel like we've given them a reason to shout.
Mm.
Whether they might have done something that tipped us over, but we've not been able to regulate ourselves. And that is not their fault.
Yeah.
You know, so often they're just being kids.
Yeah, that's so helpful, Anna. And as you were saying that, I was thinking about the relationship I have with my 7-year-old. So I'm autistic. He's autistic. He also has ADHD. You know, we had such a challenging start in our life. You know, he was really sick. I was really unwell. But we actually have the best relationship now because, God love him, I talk about emotions and feelings every day. And we just have this place where I'll say, I'm sorry that happened. Mommy's tired, or mommy's this. And it's actually helping him name his emotions now. So in a weird sort of way, I see my moments of weakness where I get angry or sad. And I've equally got sad with him. Something happened with work 2 years ago and I couldn't hold it in. I sobbed in front of him. And I was like, it's okay, mommy's just really sad because I was working really hard for something and it didn't happen. And I want to teach my children, there's no right or wrong emotion, feel it and let's talk about it. And I really love that advice. And it really is, we're just move from the shame to the responsibility and to the action, because when we're in the shame, nothing can be repaired or fixed. Nothing.
Yeah, and I love what you did there. You gave him a point of reference for that emotion that he was seeing, because children are egocentric. It means that for a long time, they think the world revolves around them. Everything that is happening in their home is a direct impact of them.
Yeah.
And we know that that's not true. We know that if we're upset about something, it's probably absolutely nothing to do with them at all. But they don't.
They
see
don't.
That. And without a point of reference, they can take some responsibility for that. So you saying, this is what's happening with my work and this is what I feel sad about, you're giving a point of reference for that.
Yeah.
And that is a really powerful thing to do.
And also the final thing before we move on to the audience confession is, I had a moment with him on Sunday evening. I was packing to go to London. And this is what I mean about the focus of emotions in our house and the value we put on happiness is everything. And I said to him, I'll try bring you back a little bit of a surprise from London. What would you like? And he turned to me. It was quite emotional. He said, I don't want any surprise. I just want you to have a really happy trip.
Oh, how lovely.
And I just thought, as an 8-year-old, you know what, Laura, you're not doing too bad a job.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
We're not. We were never supposed to do this whole motherhood thing alone. The village is gone and it's not coming back anytime soon. That is why I've created an online village just for you. Imagine this. You have 24/7 access to like-minded mums in a safe online space away from social media. And I'm there too. You get to access 2 monthly online meetups with me and other guest experts, all designed to help you navigate different chapters of motherhood. And you have access to the Mind Mummy Coaching Academy, your online vault of bite-sized classes and advice, all designed to help you be a happier on-camera mum. You don't have to do this alone anymore. Click the link in the podcast description and say yes to a happier on-camera way. Let me help you. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's not selfish to mind mommy. It's essential. So shall we move on to the audience mum fashion? Are you ready to help me answer it?
I am.
I'm a mom of 2 small children and I've never shared this with anyone before because I feel so ashamed. Prior to becoming a mother a few years ago, I was always a very calm person and I always imagined I'd be a really calm mother. I used to judge mothers if I saw them raising their voice to their children. I never understood how anyone could do that to their children. Now that I'm a mother who shouts at their children, there are moments when I feel so much rage and anger that I can't hold it in. I'm exhausted and constantly trying to do everything for my family. I love and adore my children and I don't know where this anger is coming from. One day I got so angry that I left the room, went outside and kicked the wall in my garden. The guilt afterwards consumed me for days. I want to share this in the hope that there are other mothers out there who have shouted at their children or felt anger like I have. I feel completely alone and like the worst mother in the world. I wish I could be a better mother for my children because they deserve so much more than me.
I feel so, so sad listening to that. All I hear is a very loud inner critic that is telling this amazing mother that she's doing it wrong and she's not good enough for her children. And I just want to wrap her up and tell her, you are the exact perfect mother for your children. It's so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's so many people, everyone listening to this will have moments of absolute resonance with what she's saying there. And I think, you know, what I'm also hearing is just the pressure. The pressure that she's putting on herself to do everything for her family, probably to do everything brilliantly, and that she loves her children. But my question at the end there was, what about you? Like, what about your, you know, I think self-love can feel like a pretty strong calling when you're such a harsh self-critic. You know, self-love can feel so far removed from how you feel about yourself. Like, there are definitely the lowest points for me. It was not self-love. I hated who I was and how I was. And I didn't feel deserving of care and rest and all of those things. But those are the things that drive us into those moments where we break.
Yeah.
You know, and it's in starting to shrug these off and realize that you deserve some of that care and kindness and you never stop being a kid. Like, we have an inner child too. And it's in those moments where that inner child is going, I can't do this anymore. What about me? I'm not okay. I can't do this. I can't be the grown up. Yeah. And I think as we can start to tend to ourselves a little bit more in the way that we turn towards and care and tend for our children, you know, we start hearing ourselves. We stop abandoning ourselves, because that is what's happening in these moments, is you see your needs. You feel your needs, you feel those emotions, those confusing and conflicting just emotions that come with motherhood, and you try and shut them down and you say it's not okay. And we're silencing that inner child in ourselves. Yeah. Yeah. And as we, you know, with our kids, when they're feeling big feelings, we say, talk to me about it, what's going on? Yeah. You know, we value them. We recognize that they can be both excited and overwhelmed at the same time. We recognize that they can be grateful to be at the park, but also really upset how that one kid spoke to them. You know, we can hold those conflicting emotions in our kids, but holding them for ourselves is so important.
It's so important. And actually something you said there about, you know, the little girl in us, and it actually brought up emotion for me, because I have a little girl. She's 3. She's also Anna. I promise I didn't name her after you. You're like, Laura is a serious girl fan. But I really and I have two boys, but there's something about having a little girl that I really look at her now and I become so aware when she's playing with her dollies. And I'm like, it's starting. Her belief system around what a good mother does, how a good mother behaves, it's beginning. She's doing it. She's leaning into that nurturing role. She's only three. And then I imagine her as a mum. And I often imagine her as me when I was deeply struggling with my mental health as a new mum 8 years ago, navigating the worst chapter of my life. And I'm like, what would I want her to know? What would I want her to do? How can I change this so that my little girl never ever feels like I did as a mother? And I think part of what you said there about our little inner girl is really helpful when we're in those vulnerable moments as a mum to go, right, what would I say to 4-year-old version of me? How does she need to be supported? Because yes, we're adults, but part of me very much still feels like that 4-year-old lost little girl.
Yeah.
And I think when we can reframe it to that and see our vulnerability and see that actually it all started when we were that little girl, I think it's so much easier to meet ourselves with that compassion, because you and I both felt the compassion for that mom there. The minute she started talking, we were like, oh my goodness. But it's clear she doesn't have that compassion for herself. Yeah. And it's so hard to get sometimes, isn't it?
And I really do believe that the conversation that we've had on this podcast is going to be so therapeutic for her, for her to listen to. But, you know, I'd want to say to her, how can you make the road smooth for yourself right now? Like her contingency, you know, that gap between the Mary Poppins and the Hulk is obviously, you know, it's really small right now. She's not okay. She's depleted. So how can she see the next weeks and months as a, you know, I'm burnt out. It's burnout. Mm-hmm. It's nervous system, state of being frazzled and easily triggered. And we need to nurture our nervous systems back.
Yeah.
To more resilience. We can't self-criticize, blame and shame our nervous systems back into resilience. It does not work. It does the opposite thing. So it's about self-mothering. It's about allowing other people to mother you. And I feel mothered by funny things, Laura. I feel I went up to a Little Dish, a brand that create kids' meals for the freezer, right? And I was stood there in there with this team of people and I was like, do you know that I feel mothered by your freeze meals?
Yeah.
Do you know that in those moments when I have nothing left and I know that you have provided a product that is in my freezer and I can just microwave it for my kids, I'm allowing myself to be mothered by really strange things in my life because we need that. We need to find ways to make the path smooth for ourselves when we haven't got it in the tank. So I'd encourage her to let go. And I know it's hard and sometimes we have to have it prized out of our kind of white knuckle grip. There's a whole reason I wrote Raising a Happier Mother, which would be such, I would say to her, get your headphones, put it on your, listen to it like a podcast, listen to it in the car, listen to it on a walk. Let the words start challenging that fantasy version of the mother that we just cannot live up to. Start embracing the mess, the messy middle, the life that is lived in the grays, you know, the imperfect, the not good enough. You know, we do a lot of stuff that isn't good enough compared to our own standards. And that's just the nature of being human.
But that's also key what you say. We need to revisit our standards. I'm all about lower those standards, lower those expectations. Who set them? Who said this is what a good mother is? Who said you need to do this? Because actually, we were never supposed to do this alone. There is supposed to be a village and it's gone. And we, as mothers, are doing the absolute best we can and it's breaking us. So we need to look at the expectations we're placing on ourselves, not that others are placing on us, because we can't control what others are placing, but on ourselves. And I love what you're saying about the freezer meals, because I suggest this to my clients as well, who are extremely depleted and there's no village. I'm like, it's time to cut corners. To like just lean into whatever you can do to make life easier. If that means freezer meals, if that needs takeout, if that means outsourcing, you do it. Because you are doing it in the absence of the village and that's not okay.
Absolutely. And sometimes it feels like you're lowering your standards beyond where you want them to be. Like in the summer, my son was burnt out. He's autistic. He was going through burnout. He was absolutely frazzled. He was the Hulk within a split second. And what we did, because he was finding it very hard to sit down and eat meals, I would just literally put dinner on the grass in the garden on a plate.
Yeah.
And I would say, we're eating dinner in the garden. Wouldn't even have a picnic blanket, Laura. And he'd be up and down on the swing, running around with his pita bread. And I remember my husband saying, what if he never sits down at the table again? And I said, you know what? After my experience of burnout, this is what is going to enable him to build up the resilience enough to sit down when he needs to sit down.
Yeah.
You know, it's in pulling back. And we sometimes think, but if I let my standards go completely, what? I'm just, that's it. I'm going to be like, everything's on the floor and I'll never have a tidy home and I'll never be organized and I'll never, my you kids will never eat the table. Yeah. But it's in pulling back that enables you to rebuild, to re-resource, to rest and recuperate. And, you know, it's that that builds up the resilience to be able to address the emails, to be able to feel a bit more organized.
And I'll ask you this one final question before we leave, Anna. If you wanted a mum to know one thing, she might be at the very start of her motherhood journey, she might have a 10-year-old, and you wanted her to know one thing, what would it be?
Oh, there are so many things. Picking one thing is tricky, isn't it? Just talk.
Yeah.
Talk to people who will validate how you're feeling. Just, we have a very deep human need to feel heard. And if you haven't got people in your life who get you, you know, it's time consuming, but you've just got to look further until you do. Keep going to groups, keep, like, you know, finding people on Instagram that resonate, and whatever it is, you need to feel seen and validated. If you've, otherwise, especially if you're critical, self-critical, and you've got that shaming voice, you know, having other people who get it just starts breaking that down. And that can be absolutely, it can be life-saving and life-changing and motherhood-saving and motherhood-changing when we can start finding ways to get compassion for ourselves. And that often starts with speaking to people who can give us that compassion.
Yeah. I think there's so much power in that, and I love it. It's almost the sense of feeling seen. I feel like this, I'm saying it out loud. And for that to be met with, I feel it too. And often as mums, that is the best thing that can happen, because it can feel so lonely and we can feel like we're doing it all wrong. But actually, and you and I have this privilege, we know most of us feel the same.
Yeah.
Most of us are doing it. Most of us have no idea what we're actually doing, you know, regardless of
our
profession.
We're just doing our best with what we know and what we have and where we're at.
And the thing is, our best will look different every day, won't it? Every hour, every day. And yes, Anna Matter, thank you so much for joining me on Momfessions. It has been such a pleasure. I could listen to your voice all day. You seem to have a genuine gift with articulating how so many of us are feeling in a really comforting way. And I would urge anyone listening, check out Anna's page. I'm going to link them all in the bottom. Definitely check out some of her books. We link them. They're almost more than books. They really will fundamentally change how you view yourself as a mother and how you nurture yourself and care for yourself. Because in my mind, if I can mother myself, I can be the best mother I can be for my children. And that is the gift, I think, that Anna Matter has given all of us. So Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me and for these conversations that you're having that are just, going to be so pertinent and powerful. And I feel very privileged to be one of them. So thank you.
Wow, that was such a special episode. The fact that Anna was willing to share that vulnerability and share her moment of mum rage, and then for us to support the audience Momfession around mum rage, was such a special one to me. And I hope you are taking a few things from this, but what I really, really want you to take from this episode is, as mums, we all experience mum rage. It doesn't make you a bad mum. It doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It doesn't deserve to carry any guilt or shame. Because all that mum rage is simply a reflection of depleted reserves. And so if you can do one thing from today, I hope it's that you can erase the word mum rage from your vocabulary and instead replace it with depleted reserves, and give yourself the compassion that you deserve, that when you experience those intense feelings of anger towards yourself or your children or whoever it might be, that instead, as Anna said, meeting yourself with judgment and shame, meet yourself with recognizing how vulnerable you are, recognizing how depleted you are, let's tap into our inner little girl and talk to ourselves the way we deserve to be spoken to, and recognize that we are simply trying to do it all as mothers in the absence of the village. There has never been a harder time to be a mother. We were never, ever supposed to do this without the village. And yet you are doing it every day, and you are doing it so well. And I want you to recognize the amazing mother you are. I want you to ditch the shoulds of what a good mother is. She doesn't exist. It's a myth. It's a myth that is driven by a false narrative in society. You decide what a good mom is. You decide what that looks and feels like for you. And in the process, you make a promise to yourself today that from now on, you will meet yourself with compassion. You will put your needs first, whatever that looks like, whether that is having frozen meals for dinner, whether that is indulging in your favorite Netflix show. But most importantly, hopefully that means to you by now that that is meeting yourself with compassion and turning down that inner critic and telling that inner critic to shut up, that you are an amazing mother and you are doing it exactly as you need to do it, given your unique circumstances. And so it feels appropriate to end this episode with an audience mom fashion that really is her describing how she finally has surrendered to not doing it all and how she finally has recognized she is just one person. And that she can't do it all, and that's okay. So please give it a listen. And thank you so much for listening. And remember, be kind to yourself. You are absolutely phenomenal and you are doing your best. Hope you enjoy this voice note.
Hey, Laura, I'm a 40-year-old mom of four boys, aged between 3 and 9. I've had my own event management company for over 13 years. It's been so hard. I've never been able to take maternity leave. I've worked up to the day before baby was born. I went back to work straight away. I felt the judgment, the shame, the exhaustion, the fear, the anger that's come with motherhood, and it's been hard. I've tried really hard for the past 9 years to do it all, pretend I can do it all. And after COVID and having baby number 4, I finally realised, I finally hit a wall. I can't do it anymore. I know it's now time to make a change. I'm totally burnt out and I need to reset, recharge and look after my family and me before I lose myself completely. September will see my last event for a while. I haven't told anybody except my husband. It's taken 9 years to finally admit and be okay with not doing it all. It's my life. I still have choices as a mum, a wife and a woman. She's still there. It's time for change.
Thank you so much for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the follow or subscribe button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and rating wherever you're listening. I'd really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources or learn more about the village, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching. I hope you have a wonderful week. And remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy. It's essential. This was an Insanity Studios production. The production manager was Charlotte Mason. The podcast producer was Saffron Mirza. And the production assistant was Abby Sandler.